Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Recruit, recruit, recruit. Recruit, recruit, recruit.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network, your new source for 24-hour sports coverage. You can give us a call today, as always, on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We've got a terrific show lined up for you today. We'll have the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair.
That's the heart of a tiger.
That is the heart of the tiger. He'll be joining us in the second hour at 7:30. Talking a little LSU baseball, LSU football recruiting. We'll also have Ron Higgins on from Tiger Details. He'll give us updates on the LSU situation with Will Wade, a story that just never dies. And then Connor O'Gara, our friend from Saturday Down South, he'll join us in the third and final hour, as he'll give us a recap from his perspective on the NFL draft. Plus, we'll talk Houston Astros baseball. We'll get to the NBA playoffs here in the first hour around 6:32. Rockets Warriors. That series is actually going down the way I anticipated. Bucks and Celtics. That series is what I anticipated as well. We'll dive in deep into both of those shortly. But I want to start off with LSU, Ed Orgeron, and Cruden. That's right. Recruiting. LSU.
Recruit.
I missed my cue.
No, that's perfect.
I was getting the highlight for that.
Because Ed O is so excited about them being a quote-unquote national brand.
Recruit.
Played it twice for you there.
Thank you. So, a few days after getting a commitment from yet another top out-of-state recruit for the 2020 class and the 2021 class, LSU head coach said the program has a national brand. The Tigers landed their second five-star commitment in the 2020 class this past weekend, giving LSU the number one ranked class in the nation by 247 Sports. And then Orgeron picked up another big commitment on Monday from four-star linebacker Antoine Sampaugh, which just adds to the stat class. Orgeron, talking on 104.5's Off the Bench on Tuesday, commented on the program's recruiting success without naming recruits, because if he did, that would be an NCAA violation. Coach O knows better. He knows what to do. That's right. Hold that tiger.
What a great tiger.
We coming.
We going to get him.
There it is. I love that. This is what he had to say.
One team, one heartbeat.
I'm done. I really am. I'm done. Sorry.
Please don't be done. I love that. Quote, unquote, we have a national brand. LSU has always had a national brand. We've reached out. We've done a good job reaching out and getting certain commits early. Those guys have been doing a great job recruiting for us, recruiting their class. That's the key. I've talked about this before on a lower level with Billy Napier. And when he first took over as the Raging Cajuns head coach, and they're trying to build their brand, it's all about the culture, right? They have the whole moniker where the U and the L in culture is uppercase, and it's in the vermilion and white colors, okay? What they've done a very good job at UL is recruiting certain guys and then having those guys recruit for them. And that's why Billy Napier had the best recruiting class in the Sun Belt on National Signing Day, both in the early signing period and in the spring. Ed Orgeron and his staff are taking the same approach. This is smart. Because now, it's not like the old days, where these kids didn't have communication with one another, where an offensive lineman in Erath would have absolutely no idea what's going on with a wide receiver in Metairie.
What about an offensive lineman in Erath and a quarterback in North California? You know what I mean? There's no shot these guys can get together.
Back in the day,
20 years ago?
Right. But now, with social media, smartphone technology, these guys are connected. So as soon as one of them sees that one of them commits, they chirp at each other. They talk to each other. They're DMing each other. They're calling each other. Okay, it's a different ball game. And Ed Orgeron, who's an old school recruiter, remember, this is a guy that learned the recruiting game from who? Jimmy Johnson down at Miami. Okay, in the late 80s. This is where Ed O made his bones, so to speak. And then carried that along with him when he hooked up with Pete Carroll at USC. This man knows how to recruit. He knows how to do the old school kind of recruiting. Learned it from Jimmy Johnson at Miami, carried that over to USC and Pete Carroll. Hell, he recruited really well at Ole Miss. He didn't coach him up at Ole Miss, but he knew how to get recruits in there. There's a reason why Houston Nutt was able to win those first early years and be really good with Edo's guys. Okay? And then when Houston Nutt had to recruit his own players, all of a sudden Ole Miss wasn't good again. But Edo has adjusted. His staff has adjusted to this new way of recruiting and getting the recruits to do the recruiting for you. And here they are. 247 Sports has them 2020 commits, the number one ranked class, not only in the SEC, but nationally. They have 14 verbal commitments. 11, Cody, are out of state. 11 are out of state.
Makes you wonder how much, I don't know, I'd have to look and see in an entire signing class if there would even be room for 11 out of state guys.
I mean,
if they're out, they're five stars, they're not
making. And he's going coast to coast. This isn't, there's 11
space
out.
Space coast to coast.
This isn't, they have 11 commitments outside of the state and they're all from Texas, right? That's not. We're talking, they're poaching guys on the West Coast. Different time zones,
right,
is what they're doing here.
I'm picturing Coach O dressed like Space Ghost.
The Tigers' three in-state commitments are ranked in the top 13 prospects from Louisiana, including Kayshawn Boutte, the talented wide receiver from Westgate High School down in New Iberia. He's been a long-time commitment for them. According to 247 Sports, more than half of the state's top 10 prospects are considered strong leans to sign at LSU. Orgeron had this to say, Louisiana is always going to be our priority. We're going to get the best players in the state of Louisiana to play for LSU. Hold that tiger. Orgeron said LSU has been recruiting the offensive and defensive line for 2 years, but those areas will be a priority for the remaining recruiting period. This is what they got lined up. This class includes three of the nation's top 10 wide receivers. I'll say it again. The 2020 class that they are putting together has three of the nation's top 10 wide receivers.
Rakeem, somebody to throw them the ball.
Rakeem Jarrett, number 3 from Washington, D.C. Jermaine Burden, who's ranked number 5 from Calabasas, California. That's a great name. And, of course, Kayshawn Booty, number 8 from Westgate High, right here in Acadiana. In Orgeron's tenure as head coach, he's only signed one top 10 wide receiver. That's Terrace Marshall, who is the number 3 wide receiver coming out of Parkway High School. Is this part of, we've talked about this for years, LSU becoming more of a dynamic offense. When we think back of Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry era with Zach Mettenberger as the quarterback, we think of, yeah, that's, they had an immense amount of offensive talent, but they didn't do anything with it, right? They were a mediocre bowl team those 2 years. Despite having a future NFL quarterback, 2 future Pro Bowl wide receivers. Think about that. They had 2 future Pro Bowl wide receivers playing at the same time. And they had a future Super Bowl winning running back out of the backfield. And that was it. Like, the knock on LSU was, especially towards the tail end of Les Miles' tenure, was they're wasting offensive skill position guys. He can recruit them. He recruited Jarvis Landry. He recruited Odell Beckham. He recruited Hill. He recruited Leonard Fournette, Darius Geis. We could go on and on here, right? But then things kind of soured, and those offensive skill position guys, with the exception of running backs, were like, nah, we're going to go somewhere else. But now, with a change in philosophy, and LSU did open up things offensively last year towards the end of the season, and particularly against Texas A&M and then the bowl game versus UCF in the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl, and through spring ball, and they brought in Brady to help tweak the offense, this is a team that wants to pass more. This is a team that wants to be more dynamic on offense. And when you show recruits that you have a commitment to becoming more dynamic on offense, those great skill position players at wide receiver, at running back, and at quarterback, guess what? They'll want to come play for you. This is a direct reaction to their change in philosophy offensively. We've heard about that change in offensive philosophy for years. It started to finally take root last year, and now you're seeing the benefits of that. Because kids aren't stupid. Kids will call you out on your BS. Do you think Les Miles and Cam Cameron would have been able to get those 3 wide receivers, Cody? Towards the tail end of their tenure? Yeah. No.
Not at the tail end, no.
No. At the tail end, no, because
in 2004, maybe. But not in 2008.
And kids aren't stupid either. You know what I'm saying? They'll call you on your BS and be like, yeah, you say that you're going to pass, but we know you got Leonard Fournette. You're not passing, right? And that was Miles' philosophy. He loved Leonard Fournette, so he was going to run Leonard Fournette. Damn the passing game.
Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, they're pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah.
just saying.
Just a little bit.
They're pretty good.
And Orgeron went back to that. And this is I found a very interesting quote here. Recruits see Odell Beckham, they see Jarvis Landry, the success that those guys have had, obviously. They come in, they look at our new offense, which is mainly 3 wide, 4 wide, and 5 wides. They see the quarterbacks we have committed, the quarterbacks that we have on our football team. And when they talk to offensive coordinator Steve Ensminger and passing game coordinator Joe Brady, who they poached away from the New Orleans Saints, they see the commitment we have to the passing game. There it is. There it is right there. Orgeron made a commitment with Ensminger, but bringing in Joe Brady, a guy that's worked with Drew Brees, is going to make every quarterback recruit that they talk to go, yes, I'm interested. I'm interested. And now that's helped LSU land, as of right now, the number 1 ranked recruiting class in the nation. in the nation, just not the state of Louisiana, just not the Southeastern Conference, but the state of Louisiana. And it's, you have to say, it's impressive. He's always known how to recruit, always. But now they're getting guys in the backyard of other things. Look, they got Max Johnson, pro-style quarterback. You know where he's from? Watkinsville, Georgia. That's in the backyard of the Bulldogs. They're getting quarterbacks in the backyard of other SEC powerhouse teams. TJ Finley, pro-style quarterback. He's been a long-time commit since May of last year. He's an in-state prospect. So they're getting guys from in-state. They're getting guys out of state, coast to coast, Space Ghost. Big up.
I think we have that theme somewhere in here.
Impressive. It's just been an impressive performance with recruiting. This program feels like it's building momentum for all the people that were knocking Edo and all the people that wanted him fired after the Troy loss. And there was plenty. And there was plenty that called this radio station because I remember listening every day. You know who you are. The man got you 10 wins, got you a bowl game, victory in the Fiesta Bowl last year, and now has the number one rated recruiting class for next season. Things are trending in the right direction. And here's the other thing about Ed O. I'll give him credit. He's not afraid to let other guys come into the room. Early in his career, when he was at Ole Miss, he struggled. He wanted to control everything about that program. Every room had to go through him and his wall of Red Bull cans to his office, okay? He may still be that high-energy guy, but he's not as much of a control freak as he used to be, and it's paying off big time, especially the way the offense is ran and how they're able to recruit. So, Ed O, doing a good job at LSU. We'll talk more about LSU and recruiting after this break here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast right now on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network, your new 24-hour source for sports and sports highlights.
Ooh, do you want to tell them what we learned yesterday about Stadium Network?
Ooh, yes.
I think this is maybe a little caveat to kind of give you an idea of Stadium Network replaced ASN, the American Sports Network.
That's correct, which you're probably a little bit more familiar with.
Yeah, you've seen it during NFL games or high-profile college games. They'll cut to, some military base overseas somewhere, and they'll show, the group of soldiers or whatever it is, troops, watching the game on TV, and they're saying, this game also broadcast on ASN, the American Sports Network, to our men and women worldwide, overseas, and all that and everything. Well, the American Sports Network apparently has been replaced by Stadium. So that's what Stadium is now. It's a rebrand or a relaunch. I don't know how you want to call it. But, yeah, we learned that yesterday. So food for thought.
Yes, and they have sports talk. They have sit-down interview shows.
Me and RP3, we try and strive every day to be Sauce in the SRAM. Don't we? No, he couldn't even run that, Joe. He couldn't even do that.
Sauce and the SRAM wish they were us.
They do. They really do. But Sauce and they just
have better hair.
Their sister stations with Honor Club TV, we found out, which is why they also air ROH on
That's
the weekends
correct.
Ring of Honor Wrestling.
So look, man, if you're looking for a new spot to watch sports on television, get your sports highlights, your sports commentary, tune into Stadium locally here, KXKW, Channel 32.1. We're on in the mornings, simulcast, So you get to look at the magnificent 103.7 The Game studios, and obviously me, which, who doesn't want to start their morning looking at this face?
You had me at this face.
And my wife will be calling here shortly and disputing my claim. but something that cannot be disputed, Cody, is
Becky Lynch's Raw and SmackDown Women's Championships.
We'll get to that later. That's what we call tease in the business. No, what cannot be disputed is I think the difference that Joe Brady is making to the staff there at LSU. Now, look, Edo already had a good class for 2019. He was already trending with a lot of these recruits for 2020 before they poached away Joe Brady away from the New Orleans Saints. They did that earlier in this year at the conclusion of the season, right? So they go get him as the quote-unquote passing game coordinator. He was hired away in January from being an offensive assistant with the New Orleans Saints. He's entering his first recruiting cycle. So he wasn't really part of the 2019 recruiting cycle. Most of LSU commits, if you remember, signed during the early period back in November of 2018. And then they just finished off the class here in late February. So the 2020 class is really Brady's class. This is what Orgeron had to say, that his newest assistant, the young dynamic assistant who's been working with Drew Brees and has been learning the game under Sean Payton, which holds a lot of weight in that quarterback room, which holds a lot of weight with those running backs and wide receivers. Okay, you're associated with the Saints, you're associated with Drew Brees. It means a lot. Orgeron said that his newest assistant's duties are mainly recruiting wide receivers, tight ends, and some quarterbacks. They have three wide receiver commits for the 2020 class that are ranked in the top 10 nationally.
That's 30% of the top 10.
So he's going to be in charge of recruiting your wide receivers, your pass catchers, tight ends. I guarantee you those tight ends are not going to be just blockers anymore. Okay, not because he's coming from the Sean Payton offense where the tight end is critical in the passing game. Expect to see that now with that. Quote, Orgeron said he's doing an outstanding job. He brings immediate respect and attention. He's young. He's energetic. At the end of each day, he texts me a daily report on the guys that he's seen. He's an outstanding evaluator and outstanding recruiter. Joe Brady could be what puts LSU over the top against the likes of A&M and Alabama. That's right. I said it right here. Coming up here on RP3 and Company NBA playoffs right here on 103.7 The Game.
Looped it into Kevin Durant. Head up with the dribble. Drives on Tucker. Pulls up the right elbow. It's up and good. Kevin Durant as Curry flashed by to provide a little bit of a screen. It's 104-92. KD with 22.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. NBA playoffs are to the point where they're interesting. The first round was, let's be honest, lackluster. I barely paid attention to them. The matchups were, it was so overwhelming in favor of the higher seed that it did not make for compelling theater, which that's what the NBA is when it's at its best. And with the exception of the Denver Nuggets and San Antonio Spurs series, which went seven games, there wasn't really any drama, right? But we got these marquee matchups here for the conference semifinals. In the Eastern Conference, Toronto, Philly, they're knotted up at 1-1. Milwaukee, Boston, now they're knotted up at 1-1. We'll get to that series here in a second. In the Western Conference, you got that Portland-Denver series, which should be interesting. Denver holds a one-game lead in that. But last night, it was Golden State-Houston Rockets. Of all the matchups, that's probably one nationally more people are excited about is that one, because it's a rematch of last year's Western Conference Finals with a lot of intrigue. If Chris Paul doesn't get injured in that series, a lot of people believe that the Houston Rockets will win. I think that's a bit presumptuous, but that's fine. The Rockets are now down 2 games to none against the Warriors. Just like that. Golden State took care of the Rockets 115-109 last night. James Harden gets injured, suffers an eye injury or eyes injury, and the Warriors took advantage. Kevin Durant brought it on both ends of the court. The Warriors kept their mouth shut and handled business at home. Now the two-time defending champions are headed to Houston. Are now headed to Houston with a 2-0 lead in the Western Conference semifinals. Durant scored 29. He also established an early defensive tone against Harden, his former teammate in Oklahoma City. This is what Draymond Green had to say afterwards. Tonight, I think it was a great officiated game. Gotta love this guy. You gotta love this guy. If he's on your team, you love him. And you probably hate him, too. If he's on the opposing team, you hate him. But he's throwing shade because the Rockets complained about the officiating in Game 1. And then they took it another step further on the whiny scale when they talked to that. They audited the Western Conference Finals last year and said that the Golden State Warriors received preferential treatment from the officials. Man up, shut up, do your job, be better. That's what I have to say to the Houston Rockets. Man up, shut up, and do your job better. I can't stand that kind of stuff. That happened last year, bro. Like last year. That happened a year ago. You didn't lose last year's series because of officiating. You lost last year's series because Chris Paul got hobbled and James Harden wilted under the pressure in Game 6 and 7. If James Harden would have played better, if James Harden could have shot, what, 3 more 3-pointers in the closeout game, they would have been playing for the NBA championship. Instead, you failed. Own it. Accept it. Stop making excuses a year later and go out there and do your job. It's very simple. This is what Draymond Green had to continue to say. They let us be physical, both teams, and they made the calls they needed to make. It was kind of disheartening for a game that I loved since I was a child to see the talk over the last 2 days was nothing about basketball and everything about foul calls. Is that what the game is coming to? It's a good question. I think Draymond Green a lot of times is an absolute damn knucklehead, but that's a good question. Harden got hit in both eyes early in the game but was able to return and finish with 29 points and 7 rebounds. Harden said he could barely see. Cody, do you believe that? Do you believe a guy who says he could barely see was still able to score 29 points?
I mean, I believe him because I'm going to believe also that we have different definitions of barely.
Thank you.
You know, I think that he thinks he could barely see, but I think in the literal sense of being able to barely see.
An eye doctor would be like, bro, what are you doing? Get
right,
out of here.
Right.
Okay, I got you. Bravo. Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, he is one of the best, you know, scorers in the world.
That is correct.
So it's not like I'm not trying to take anything from him, but you can barely see. I don't know.
And this is what happens, too. And this is why you don't complain when you're in a 7-game series. It's different if you're the Saints. You can complain afterwards because there's not another game to play when you get jobbed by the refs, right? There's not another game, okay? This is why you don't do this in basketball, though. Boos regularly greeted both Harden and Chris Paul at a deafening Oracle Arena after the Rockets complained about the 104-100 Game 1 defeat that officials missed foul calls when the Warriors closed out on Houston's 3-point shooters. Don't give the other fan base something to get even more amped up about. These are veteran players. You'd think they would know this. Klay Thompson, the unsung hero of the Golden State Warriors, scored 21 points and hit consecutive three-pointers late in the third. Draymond had 15 and 12. Game three is Saturday in Houston. Steph Curry is hobbled with a little bit of an injury. He dislocated his left finger in the first quarter, but x-rays were negative, and he returned with it taped. So he's a little hobbled. Can Houston take advantage of that? Or are the Warriors in the Rockets' head? Because it kind of feels that way. That this is the big hump that they can't get over. That this is the giant that they cannot slay. And now they're down two games to nothing. Now, when they go back to Houston, that place is going to be absolutely lit. For sure. But we'll have to see. Because right now, that's the one semifinal series that is in absolute question. Because Golden State Warriors, your defending two-time NBA champions, are now up 2-0 on the team that's supposed to give them the most difficult challenge of any team in the playoffs, Western Conference or Eastern Conference. That's how it's been billed all year. The Houston Rockets, that's the team that's going to, that's the only team that can prevent Golden State from winning another title. And the Rockets are now down 2-0. Last night also, it just wasn't the Western Conference semifinals. It was also the Eastern Conference semifinals. And the Milwaukee Bucks, they got back on track last night. 123-102 victory over the Boston Celtics. And that was needed because the way Giannis played in the first game and that they were able to contain him, he still scored over 20 points, but he wasn't very efficient. And the Bucks got kind of beat up, roughed up by the Boston Celtics. The Greek Freak, though, and others stepped up in Game 2 last night there in Milwaukee. Giannis attacked the rim. Chris Middleton, he hit long-range shots, and Eric Bledsoe was effective. The Greek Freak had 29 points, 10 rebounds. Middleton made 7 of Milwaukee's franchise playoff-high 23-pointers, helping the Bucks even their second-round playoff series against the Celtics.
Stolen by Giannis. Can they pick it up? This time they get the turnover. Oh, the length of Giannis pays off. Here come the Bucks. Giannis charging down the lane to the rim. Double clutch. No good. Tipped in. Giannis tipped it home. And the Bucks have a 14-point lead.
Giannis is the leading candidate for the NBA MVP. He went 7-16 from the floor, 13-18 at the foul line. Remember, he only had 22 points on 7-for-21 shooting in Game 1. Middleton chipped in with 28 points. Bledsoe, who was only scored 6 points in the opener, he had 21 points and 5 assists. The Bucks led by as many as 31 points after a very close first half. They just dominated the third quarter. They came out and punched Boston in the mouth, and the Celtics had no answer. Huge for them to even up the series before it goes back to Boston. Kyrie Irving in the loss had 26 points and 11 assists. Brad Stevens had this to say, the Boston Celtics head coach: "We weren't very good on either end." Done. that's just an old fashioned just, "We weren't very good on either end." That's a Bill Belichick: "We're moving on to Cleveland." Okay. I think this is going to be an entertaining series. I still think Boston's going to win the series. When Kyrie Irving plays at a high level, it's tough. It's going to be extremely tough to beat them. I still think Boston probably wins the series in 6 games, 7 games. I wouldn't be surprised if Milwaukee wins because they are the number one overall seed. I think in the Eastern Conference, Boston, Celtics, Bucks, I give an edge to the Celtics. But I still think that's nearly a coin flip series. Same thing with the 76ers-Raptors series. I think that's a coin flip series. That could go six or seven games. I think the Denver-Portland series could go six or seven games in the Western Conference. I do not believe that the Rockets-Warriors is going to go six or seven games. It could. The Rockets have proven that they can go toe-to-toe with the Warriors. But they've spent the first two games whining about injuries and officiating. That tells me that they don't have the mindset right to take on the Golden State Warriors. They should have the mindset going into that game in that series of, we should have beat you last year. If we were healthy, we should have beat you. We let you off the hook. We missed shots. If we would have shot the ball better, that fell on us. We didn't step up when we should have. We had you on the ropes. We had you ready for the knockout punch, and we didn't deliver. And we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that happens this time around. We know we can beat you. We had you on the ropes. We should have defeated you. We should have whooped you, and we didn't. We're not going to let you off the hook this time. And instead, it's complaining about officiating and having an audit done from a year ago. And a complaining about the officiating this time around in game one already. If you already, your mindset is already giving the media built-in excuses on why you're going to lose this series, you've already lost this series. That tells me that the Golden State Warriors are in their head. And they've already lost this series. If you already think, you've already let your opponent in your head, whether you're in a ring as a boxer or you're a batter that steps into the batter's box against a pitcher or you're on the NBA hardwood, you've lost already. Chalk it up. You're done. You're done. So we'll see if the Rockets can get their act together and stop complaining and make a series of this. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, the New Orleans Pelicans didn't get the man that they wanted, but then ended up getting one that they needed probably more. We'll talk more about that right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. Stadium Sports Network. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you'd like today, 337-706-0111. Once again, 337-706-0111. We start off the day talking LSU football recruiting, the difference that Joe Brady is making in that regard. We also talked about last night's NBA playoff action, conference semifinals, Bucks. Even up their series with the Boston Celtics with a convincing win, with a dominant third-quarter performance. And the Houston Rockets are already laying down a foundation of excuses as they go down 2-0 to the Golden State Warriors. But I want to keep it with the NBA before we close out this hour. Boy, that David Griffin hire is tremendous for the New Orleans Pelicans, and it came through again yesterday. Now, Griffin started off that he was turned down by Trent Redden, his former associate in Cleveland, that's currently the Clippers assistant GM. Now, that tells me that they couldn't get everyone that they wanted. Okay. Griff already had a relationship with Redden, tried to get him to become his GM with the New Orleans Pelicans. The Clippers showed up, secured their guy, kept him in the building. Okay. That's what the Clippers are supposed to be doing. Disappointment? Sure. But on the same day that happens, where he doesn't get his guy, he ends up getting one of the absolute best trainers in all of the NBA. This guy is his first hire as the new front office leader of the New Orleans Pelicans, and the person that he's brought in won't coach. Hell, he won't even select players. Aaron Nelson, though, is going to help the New Orleans Pelicans in a different way. He's going to make sure that they're healthy. And that has been a huge bugaboo for the Pels for the last 3 to 4 years, maybe even longer, if we're being honest, where their team can't stay healthy. Whether it's their training regimen, their nutrition, or just coincidence, for whatever reason, the injury bug is always around the New Orleans Pelicans. Anthony Davis, Drew Holiday, Elfrid Payton, last year alone, Julius Randle, all those guys miss games. Now, sometimes a freak injury is a freak injury. Other times, if your team is properly conditioned, trained, and has proper nutrition, a lot of these injuries that pop up don't happen. Aaron Nelson is considered one of the best in all of the NBA, and David Griffin has poached him away from the Phoenix Suns. Once again, injuries have been an issue for the New Orleans Pelicans. This may not be the most flashy hire, but it's a significant hire for the New Orleans Pelicans. This is a reaction from someone who doesn't even play for the Pels. Wow. One of the best trainers in the NBA has been with the Suns since the Barkley days, tweeted Brooklyn Nets forward Jared Dudley, who played in Phoenix from 08 to 13. Had a relationship with Griff with his Sundays as an assistant GM. Big win for New Orleans. This is a guy who doesn't even play for the Pels. Losing his stuff about how great of a trainer this cat is. Griffin worked alongside with Nelson from 93 to 2010 and saw Nelson become one of the most respected trainers in the NBA, earning praise from a slew of former Suns players. It even prompted ESPN to create a 30 for 30 documentary on Nelson's staff as the NBA's industry leaders in training. First move as general manager is to improve the training of his team, to improve the health of his team with the NBA's best trainer, most respected trainer. It may not be flashy, ladies and gentlemen, but that's the type of move that helps your team become a perennial playoff team and a championship caliber squad. David Griffin is already getting to work and doing good work at that. First hour's in the books here for RP3 and Company. Second hour, it's going to be even better. We're going to talk some Astros baseball right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
O2 and Mariznick drills this one deep to left field. Ball is hooking down the line as Rosario gives chase, and that ball is gone. A two-run home run for Jake Mariznick, and the Astros' lead is 5-0. Mariznick hits his second home run of the year. Devo delivers, and that's bounced right side into the shift. Diaz to his left, shortstop has it, throws to first in time, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros win for the third time in their last four games, defeating the Minnesota Twins 11-0. As the Astros pick up the resounding victory, their second shutout win of the season.
Welcome back to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is the producer extraordinaire. And we're broadcasting, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network, 24-hour sports. Houston Astros, you know, they opened up this road series, road trip, and series against the Twinkies there at Target Field yesterday with, I'm sorry, 2 days ago, with a 1-0 loss. Justin Verlander pitched himself a gem, but they couldn't get any runs. Well, they made up for that yesterday as they absolutely whooped the Minnesota Twins 11-0. 11-0. It goes to 11.
They took the 1-0 and they put another one. Another fun fact about the number 11. We've done this before, I believe. It's the same forwards, backwards, upside down, right side up, inside out, and outside in. Just saying. Fun fact.
That is a fun fact.
The Astros are good. Another fun fact.
Yes, and everyone chipped in yesterday. George Springer, Springer Dinger himself, 2-for-5, 2 runs scored, 2 ribbies. Jose Altuve, 1-for-4 with a run scored. Tyler White got a hit. Alex Bregman, we heard his hit. Michael Brantley, 3-for-5. Carlos Carrera, 2-for-3 with 3 ribbies. Josh Reddick, DH, 3-for-5. I mean, everyone, the only person that did not get a hit that had more than one at-bat for the Houston Astros was Diaz. He had four bats, but he somehow got an RBI with a sack. So even though he didn't get a hit, he still drove in a run.
Right, there was a bases-loaded walk as well that might have been, I forget who it was, but somebody else got an RBI on a bases-loaded walk.
Gerrit Cole looked good yesterday. If he can be their number two behind Verlander, and they can get the McHugh hit to be the number three. Gerrit Cole, 7 innings, only 1 hit, only walked 3, struck out 11. Oh, it goes to 11 again. There it is.
The number of today on RV3 and Company is 11. 1, 2, 3, 11.
I was not prepared. I was not prepared for
the count,
the Sesame Street reference. In this segment alone, we've went Spinal Tap and Sesame Street.
It's like the Firefly Funhouse in here.
A little bit today. 11-0. Now 18-12 overall. And such a great bounce back performance. Look, we've talked about this a lot. This team is built. The lineup is a murderer's row. What occurred on Monday, them not scoring a single run and only being regulated to 5 hits, is not going to happen a lot. That's a rarity, okay? It's just, that's not how it is. This lineup is too good. They're just too talented to be held in check that way. And they proved that again last night there in Minnesota. The pitching matchup for tonight's game, Colin McHugh, we talked about him, 3-2 overall in the season. ERA is not where you want it to be, 4.78. But if you could get him rolling, he could be your number three. He'll toe the rubber for the Astros as the Twins will counter with Martin Perez, 3-0 on the year, 4.44 ERA. So that'll be your matchup tonight for Astros and Twins.
And Twins, you literally just did that. Like, so Spinal Tap, Sesame Street, and old school Budweiser commercials.
And wrestling.
Well, Firefly Funny, you're right.
Of course.
Speaking of wrestling, a new episode of the 20 by 20 podcast should drop later today. Keep an eye out for that.
Give the folks a tease. What's going to be on it?
Obviously, well, there's always the Raw and SmackDown recaps that we kind of do in an abbreviated version. It's like if you've ever watched the abridged series on YouTube of any like anime, you know, Dragon Ball Z abridged or anything. We kind of give you that version of Raw and SmackDown very quickly. And then I always like to, not fantasy book, but do a little exercise between me and Clint where I come up with some kind of, not ridiculous idea, but some sort of idea in wrestling that is maybe being floated around or whatever have you. And then I kind of set it up, give my thoughts, and throw it at Clint. And then it's always fun to see what ridiculousness Clint spews out about the topic at hand at any given time.
So what I'm hearing from this 20 by 20 podcast is it's your intention to try to derail the thought process of the world famous CD.
No, because it's more fun to watch him actually try to think real hard about something. So like it's more fun to keep him on point here.
Nice.
I will say this. I will reveal my theory about the Firefly Funhouse segments with Bray Wyatt and everything. I told Raymond my thoughts on it before the show this morning.
Oh, see, now that's a tease. So you're gonna drop that on the podcast, which will drop today.
Yeah, later today, probably around the same time Uncle Jordy's show starts, probably around 2 o'clock or so. You'll see that hit the waves there. And check it out, because I have a pretty interesting theory that I'm proud of because I have yet to see it anywhere else. I know soon I will, but this is like one of those very few times that I have a theory, and Raymond can back me up here. Anytime I come with a theory or a thought or idea, I always try to preface it with, I saw it somewhere else first. I don't try to take other people's ideas and be like, oh, look at this thing I thought of. But this one is all mine. I thought of this, and I'm pretty proud of it.
You better hope it doesn't drop somewhere else in between now and the podcast.
Oh, it's already happened. It's done. It's like Avengers Endgame all over again. Social media blackout until the podcast drops. But yeah, check that out later. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then if you're a fan of just wrestling in general, not necessarily just WWE, Clint always at the end likes to give a 5 or so minute kind of rundown on goings-on outside of WWE, but still in the world of professional wrestling.
So that's right. Make sure to go check out the 20 by 20 podcast. Cody, the world-famous CD, that'll be dropping later this afternoon. Also, reminder, we got you covered today here on 103.7 The Game. We'll have Uncle Jordy on from 2 to 4. Then Bumper to Bumper Sports will be 4 to 6 today. And that'll lead right into Five Guys Stories and Lies for an hour from 6 to 7. Don Allen, Gwen Quibodeau, Bruce Brown, and the gang will be in studio. I'm going to anticipate being salty with one another. And I'll be willing to bet you they're going to be talking about the Will Wade situation from earlier this week. They will lead you into Astros versus Twins. Okay? No pregame. I'll just go right into the game. 7-11, Astros, Twins. Game 3 of this series on the road will be broadcast live tonight on 103.7 The Game.
Since we're doing reminders, I suppose, we've hit the 20 by 20. We've hit the rundown for the rest of the day and the Stros game tonight. Isn't there something else you'd like to remind the people of that may be happening on Saturday?
That's right. We talked about the world-famous CD.
Oh, I wasn't even referring to that, but go ahead with that one, too.
We'll go with that one, too.
You can plug that as well, I suppose.
The producers...
You're welcome, Clint.
The producers are no more. New show is going to be debuting on Derby Saturday. The world-famous CD. He's going solo. That's right. It's going to be Under the Dome with CD. We'll debut this Saturday from 10 to 12 right here on 103.7 The Game. The world-famous Clint Domain will be going solo. No more producers. I guess he's not carrying around that dead weight anymore.
Clint Domain, Under the Dome. I see what you did there. Well done.
But also on Saturday, we have the addition of the debut of Under the Dome with CD, but also 103.7 The Game has got you covered for your Kentucky Derby coverage via our friends at Westwood One. We will have pregame coverage live from Churchill Downs starting at 4 o'clock, and we will lead you up through the race when they gate around 5:45. So from 4 to 6, we've got you covered for all of your Kentucky Derby, the 145th running of the Derby, the Run for the Roses. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game on Saturday. That'll lead you into LSU pregame.
So we get to hear that live on 103.7 The Game.
That's the most exciting 2 minutes in sports.
That is what they say. My best Kentucky
Derby. I've been to Churchill Downs. I've never seen the Derby live. I went the week 2 years ago. I went the week before the Kentucky Derby. Met up with a buddy of mine from Indiana, another buddy of mine from Oklahoma, and we had a we sampled some bourbon. Let's just say that. It was kind of a boys' weekend, and bourbon was involved. And we actually went to Churchill Downs, did the tour, the whole nine yards. That is an immensely cool place if you ever get the chance to go. So even if it's not for the Derby, you just get to go. They have a museum, the whole nine yards. You can tour the place. You can go out there. You can lean up against the rail by the track. It's a pretty phenomenal place, kind of hallowed ground, so to speak. Tremendous if you get a chance to go to Louisville and check out Churchill Downs. You should. I had a great time.
I was getting mistaken here. I'm trying to figure out which one, because it wasn't the Kentucky Derby. So I'm looking at dates. Which one is in the middle? It would have been this. It would have been the Preakness, which would have happened in 2008. It was on May 17th. I had to look it up. That was the year Big Brown, I believe, won the Kentucky Derby and then the Preakness and then had a shot at the Triple Crown and didn't get it, I think, is how it went down.
That sounds right.
But so I did get a little confused. I just have this is my best horse racing memory, I guess we'll go with then, instead of Kentucky Derby memory.
Okay.
But as the 2008 Preakness, I was on my senior trip. I had just graduated high school, and we were in Panama City, and just craziness ensued. And I remember, you know, everyone, it's fun to watch the Triple Crown stuff. You know, it happens quick, so it's cool. You just tune in when the race happens. And somehow or another, we ended up in the condo right before the race started. So we were like, oh, let's put the race on TV. And I mean, we're on senior trip. I shouldn't have to explain past that. And I can just remember being with like a bunch of...
for Bible study.
Right, yes, of course. Yes. I can just remember being with a bunch of my buddies from school and like watching this horse race like it was the most important thing that was going to ever happen in the history of the world. Like we were basically punching each other like if our horse would like fall behind a little bit and then go. Like it was just a really ridiculous memory, and I know for a fact that I will never watch horse racing with that much passion and intensity ever again in my life. So it's something I won't forget, even though I did forget that it was the Preakness and not the Kentucky Derby. Big Brown did win, though, so shout out to Big Brown.
Shout out to the homie, Big Brown.
There you go. That's my horse racing story.
That's all I got. Florida on spring break.
No, it wasn't spring break. It was senior trip.
Senior trip.
It's different. Spring break, everyone gets that. You have to earn your senior trip.
That's right.
I guess. Revisionist history, Raymond. Revisionist history.
But yes, 103.7 The Game. We're going to take care of you for the Kentucky Derby coverage, courtesy of Westwood One this Saturday. Pregame coverage begins at 4:00. I'll take you up through the gate and through the end of the race until 6, until LSU pregame takes over for that huge series against Ole Miss. We'll talk a little bit more about that Ole Miss-LSU series when we come back right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, Stadium Sports Network. LSU's got a huge series this weekend at home at Alex Box Stadium. Ole Miss comes to town. Just a refresher. The SEC is a bit of a log jam in the standings. You get Arkansas and Vandy that sit atop the standings. Then tied for third is LSU, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Georgia. Okay, and they're only a couple games behind Arkansas and Vandy. For LSU, if they want a chance at winning the regular season championship and build some momentum heading into the conference tournament, they have a great opportunity this weekend as they bring in Ole Miss for a three-game series. And then next weekend when they go on the road and play at Arkansas for a three-game series. They wrap up the weekend series with Auburn back at home at Alex Box Stadium before the SEC tournament. Beating Ole Miss would give them some separation there. You would want them to sweep, but as long as they take 2 of 3, that could do the job. Get them some separation there in that pack, and then try to build that momentum going on to the road, because as we talked about on yesterday's show, as Cody brought up, LSU is not good on the road. Ole Miss is worse on the road than LSU is. But LSU is not a very good team on the road this year, and they have to go play at Arkansas. So you'd like them to have some confidence, build up some momentum, taking out Ole Miss this weekend. We still don't know what the rotation is going to look like. Is Zach Hess going to be the Friday night starter, or is he going to be sent to the bullpen as Paul Menary wanted to do last week? But then arm soreness with Cole Henry forced them to take Cole Henry out of that spot. He was going to become the new Friday night starter. He's been their best pitcher all year. And they had to throw Zach Hess out there as the Friday night starter, and he got roughed up by Alabama in the loss. You did see strong performances from both Eric Walker and Landon Marceau. They both pitched well against Alabama. So if you can have those guys be your Saturday-Sunday guy, if Cole Henry is recovered enough, throw him out there as your Friday guy, put Zach in the bullpen. We'll see what happens, and we'll see when Paul's going to make a decision on that, because obviously you have to game plan.
I'm looking at something Menary said yesterday, a pitching update, after they sent Henry home during the weekend at Alabama with the arm soreness. Henry went and he threw a little bit with his dad and his high school pitching coach, and Menary said that there is cautious optimism that the freshman could be back in the rotation pretty soon. Quote, all indications are he's doing much better. Now, does that mean he's going to pitch this weekend? I don't know yet, end quote.
And see, that's interesting, because if you're the staff, do you view the Ole Miss series as more important, or do you view next weekend's Arkansas series as more important?
Menary went on and said that another factor in if Henry is going to be able to come back, or if they need him to come back, is that Jaden Hill is also nearing a return. According to Menary, he's not exactly sure on the time frame with him either, but he said that Hill threw on Sunday and, quote, more length than he's thrown in a long time and felt great. I don't know if he'll be back for Auburn, the SEC tournament, or the NCAA tournament, but if he can get back, even if we use him for short stints out of the bullpen, it'd be another quality arm for us. You never know when that might factor in.
His arm soreness is that bad that they don't know if he's going to be back even for an NCAA regional?
And it tells me that if he does return, it won't be as a starter.
So Henry's going to be your guy.
That's kind of what that second statement there sounds like, yeah.
And I would anticipate, if that's the fact where Hill is still not even close to coming back, they don't know when he's going to come back, that tells me that Marceau, Walker are going to be part of your rotation on the weekend.
Yeah, Menary confirmed Marceau is going to stay. As long as he's healthy, he'll stay in that.
Hill is going to become your Friday guy, and more than likely Mikhail Hilliard, will be your midweek guy, because you have two of those games left. La Tech next week at home, and then UNO the following week. So, or maybe you throw Zach Hess out there on one of those midweek games. But so the key is going to be if the young freshman is healthy, if he's recovered from his arm soreness.
And then just continuing to reading another fun thing here. Expect to see more of Gavin Dugas.
That's correct.
Was called a spark plug by Coach Menary. And when an old school baseball guy like Paul Menary calls someone a spark plug, you can expect to see that guy in the lineup here to fourth.
Yeah, and you can't have enough bats, right? So, and look, Dugas, Maneri's been promoting him a lot. He was high on him even back as far back as Media Day. And he's said for the better part of the last few months that Dugas has been missed in the lineup. You know, he went 1-for-2 with an RBI in his first career start back on February 24th, but then tore a ligament in his thumb going to second base. That put a depth into their lineup in the infield. And this past weekend, this is what he did. He started in Saturday and Sunday's wins. He went 2-for-4 on Saturday and 1-for-4 on Sunday with a 2-RBI single. That just gives you just a yet another strong hitter in that lineup. So we'll see. We'll see when Paul makes that decision on the lineup and what's that in the rotation and what's that going to look like. So be interesting to see. We'll keep the LSU baseball talk moving right along here on RP3 and Company as we welcome on the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of the day. He is the play-by-play voice of the LSU Tigers on the LSU Sports Radio Network. It's the official voice of the Tigers, our good friend, the one and only Chris Blair. Chris, how are you this morning, brother?
Ray, I'm doing good, man. I'm finally just about moved into the new house. Tell you what, after you do that every couple of years, you eventually you figure out it's just not worth doing again.
I hear you, brother. I told my wife when we bought our house a few years ago, because we've moved around so much since we've been married, I was like, yeah, you're going to just bury me in the backyard because I'm not going anywhere. I'm done. I'm done moving. I'm over it.
No, I can tell you this. I don't know if I'll be able to convince her of that, but I know next time if we move to a new house, everything stays in this one. It comes as is,
fully furnished. There'll be photo albums of Chris and his family. He's just going to leave them behind. He's like, I'm done. I'm just
no.
Done.
Yeah, you can copy and paste. Not a big deal.
We're talking with Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris, let's talk a little bit about this baseball team. They got a much-needed road win. They've struggled a little bit on the road this year. Things didn't start off great. It started earlier in the week when we find out the injury, or the arm soreness, rather, is going to keep the new rotation from taking a foot that Paul Maneri wanted. They had to put Zach back out there as the Friday night starter. Alabama took game one, but then the Tigers responded and did so in convincing fashion, not only at the plate, but strong performances from Eric Walker and Landon Marceau as the starters in games 2 and 3 to take that series. What were your thoughts from the road series victory there at Alabama?
Well, you know, I say it all the time, and any league in Division I baseball, you know, regardless of what the other team's record is, you know, how the season has gone, it's always pretty hard to sweep on the road. Although, of course, it would have been nice. I mean, we saw a couple of sweeps by some teams that LSU is currently tied with and in some cases chasing in the SEC. But to get 2 road wins, especially, you know, it's kind of been an MO for this team, especially on the road, a couple of times at home, you know, kind of get down early and you know, find themselves down 1-0 in the series and then kind of get back on track in game 2 and game 3. You know, it's Coach Maneri mentioned to me Monday night on his radio show, for whatever reason, this is a team that likes to learn the hard way. You know, he had talked about how this Alabama team had 22 new names to the roster. And while they had struggled this year, their overall record was pretty good. I mean, they know how to win baseball games. They're just not quite there yet. But, you know, they're also trying to play for a chance to maybe get to Hoover in the SEC tournament. If they can get a couple of wins down the stretch here, avoid being in the absolute cellar of the conference. So, you know, both teams had plenty to play for motivation-wise, and they just didn't come out very aggressive offensively on Friday night. Zach Hess got roughed up a little early there. Still, I thought pitched well enough for the team to win. They just didn't get any offensive run support. So you come back, you know, as you mentioned, you're without Cole Henry, who's been kind of the bright spot or the big storyline, I guess, from the pitching staff, especially in conference play from a starter standpoint. And Eric Walker, which, you know, again, that's the good sign. He had 2 back-to-back really good performances, the Sunday against Florida and then obviously the Saturday with 9 strikeouts, a career high. on Saturday against Alabama. And then Landon Marceau, who pitched three innings, 30-some pitches against Lamar in the midweek, comes back, and I thought did a very effective job for you. Again, pitched well enough to win. This time the offense, for the first time in the series, got the early lead. They had to hold on by the skin of their teeth, but they did get the 5-4 victory. So, you know, it's interesting. I think the plan all along, as you mentioned, was to kind of put Diecast back in the bullpen there because it was really the first time all season, except maybe the first week, Ray, they had a chance to have the options to do that type of thing, you know, to bring Hess out of the bullpen and roll the dice with Cole Henry as a game one starter, move Eric Booker up, and then they felt comfortable with Landon Marceau. So, unfortunately, the way the season has gone with arm soreness and injuries just didn't happen. And I'm not so sure that it's completely taken off the table. You know, should guys get healthy here in the final stretch, headed into postseason play, but unfortunately, this doesn't look like Cole Henry's going to be able to go again this week. So, looks to be the same limitation against a rivalry team, a team playing as good as anybody in the country right now in Ole Miss.
We're on with Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris, I did notice something from the weekend series. You know, Marceau and Walker, they've definitely are pitching better. Marceau had the rough start to the year, and then he got banged up. Walker's been slow to recover from missing all of last season. But they seem like they have turned a corner. How much does that help LSU, regardless of who the Friday night guy is, whether it's going to be Zach or it's going to be Hill, that Paul and his staff know that the Saturday-Sunday spots, that they're secured. They got two reliable guys out there that they feel can help win them games.
Well, it's huge. I mean, A, because that helps you do exactly that, have the ability to feel confident enough that in the next three SEC series, you feel like you've got a chance to win with Eric and Landon on the mound. And you know, Landon was probably the most highly touted member of this number one recruiting class coming into this year. And it's just been, you know, as you mentioned, very up and down and arm soreness and the ability to throw, the inability to throw. But, you know, now that you've got these two back-to-back performances and, you know, all indications are he's good to go and feels good. And, you know, I think you feel, you know, really good. I think beyond that, though, not to put the cart before the horse, that for postseason play, I mean, really outside of, as I mentioned, the first week of the year, you really haven't had four starters that you felt consistent with. Now, again, that's with the assumption that Cole Henry, you know, is going to be back and ready to go at least in the next week or so, certainly for the postseason, which, as we all know, the way they're structured, certainly in the SEC, I mean, even with a high seed, you got to win a bunch of ballgames over there to win a title. But then when you get to a regional, you need to have two really strong guys, three really strong guys. And then you should be lucky enough to get to Omaha. I mean, that's kind of been the missing link for LSU, and not just the Tigers, but a ton of teams who have played well and gotten hot late. Once you get to Omaha, I mean, you've got to have four starters. In fact, I mean, you probably need five to feel, you know, comfortable. But, you know, that to me is where it all lies. And I've said now for many weeks, that the silver lining to be with all these injuries is that you've given opportunities to guys that maybe weren't necessarily expected to have to produce at this point in their career. And if you can ever just get everybody back healthy, I mean, the depth is going to be probably one of the biggest assets this team has, and they'll probably be one of the deepest teams in the country.
Chris, another bright spot that popped up over the weekend was Gavin Dugas. He played very well, came up with a big RBI there, especially in the third game. Paul mentioned this, you know, he's been mentioning it for a while, that the lineup took a hit once Gavin got injured and had the ligament issue, and now that he's back, he made an instant impact. How does this change their lineup or the look of the lineup, which is one of the best in the SEC or in the country, but how much does Gavin Dugas being healthy make this team even better?
It was almost as if Gavin's legend had grown so much in his absence. I mean, if you remember, he only played in the first eight games of the season before having that thumb injury. But the impact he had, you know, you could just see it. I mean, he just didn't look like a true freshman, looked confident at the plate, and probably was, outside of Zach Watson, the best right-handed hitter early on this season that was consistent, and probably the best overall right-handed hitter against left-handed pitching.
And we all know the woes LSU has had, you know, in that department, especially in SEC play. So, you know, as you mentioned, we've all been talking about, you know, the pitchers and who's available and who's not. Not a lot of people were talking about Gavin Dugas and the impact that, you know, he showed early. And you know, it was amazing to watch him because you got to imagine, you know, guys miss a week or two. There's usually some rust they have to shake off. But, you know, Gavin, you know, got to start in game two and game three at second base, made some good plays at second, a couple of really good relays to get some double plays. And then, as you said, just, you know, one of the best hitters on the weekend coming straight off the injured reserve list. So, again, that depth, he's one of those. You know, I think when you look at Dugas, and although still not quite out of the woods, I mean, Saul Garza is starting to get a little traction offensively, and I think does a great job defensively behind the plate. And then even Drew Bianco, who, you know, really struggled early on this season with his limited at-bats, but now has been called upon because of injuries in the outfield and in the infield. But he now looks pretty good. I mean, he's starting to look more confident at the plate and had a couple of good pokes this past weekend. So I think Gavin Dugas kind of headlines that group of guys that probably will see significant action down the stretch and will, you know, need to go in and not just be a placeholder. I mean, they got to go in and be an impact player. So it was exciting to see Gavin back.
We're talking to Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris, let's look ahead to this weekend, three-game set at Alex Box Stadium. Ole Miss comes to town, as you already hinted at. You can listen to all three games live here on 103.7 The Game. Chris, Ole Miss is a very good ball team. They just swept a top-10 team in Texas A&M. They have stolen the most bases and allowed the fewest stolen bases in SEC play, so they're disciplined there. But this is a team that struggles on the road. They're very bad, a very bad road team. What do you expect to see out of this series this weekend when Ole Miss comes to town?
Yeah, they're kind of a, you know, a riddle wrapped up in an enigma. When you look at their overall stats and how they stack up in the SEC, you can see why they've got a great overall record, and you can see why they've got a really good SEC record and why they're in contention for the SEC West crown. But as you said, you look at their road record, and it's like, what team goes on the bus? I mean, are there different guys suiting up? Because they're 7-8 on the road this season. And, you know, that's got to be one of the biggest advantages. And I'm sure Coach Maneri and the staff are using that to try to motivate this team. Because, again, LSU's had a tendency to kind of get a little slow out of the gate to start the series, and then they kind of wake up. You know, the Florida series comes to mind. I mean, got absolutely pounded in game one, looked like the sky was falling. And then they came back and just delivered an absolute butt-whooping in game two and game three. So I think they're motivating them by saying, hey, look, Ole Miss is a very good team, but they haven't done very well at home. We have to make sure they don't get any confidence in game one. But they're a lot like LSU. When you look at the overall roster, you see some guys that have seemed to me been on this team for more than 4 years. And, you know, Ryan Olenek comes to mind. A couple of their starting pitchers we'll see this weekend who were always kind of bullpen guys have now stepped up and been the starters. So they've got enough of a veteran mix. And then Coach Bianco's, you know, I mean, he's not the third winningest coach in SEC history for not being able to recruit. So, I mean, he's brought in some pretty good newcomers. The starter on Sunday is a true freshman. We'll see. You know, he's been kind of a real good addition, kind of a Landon Marceau, if you will, that, you know, they've really been high on. So, I mean, it's a team that hits the ball fairly well. They're about middle of the pack, field the ball about middle of the pack, and their team ERA is about middle of the pack, slightly ahead of LSU. So, it's a good team, but you're right. I mean, for some reason, they have struggled on the road. And, you know, going to play in Oxford, I can tell you, in Swayze Field, it's a raucous atmosphere. And they let you know it as soon as you step on campus Friday night before game one. And that's kind of the hope for LSU fans. I mean, I hope that the box is kind of return serve for Ole Miss, because if you give a team like that a little confidence on the road, you know, that could spell trouble for LSU.
Chris, appreciate you coming on as always, brother, but I need to ask you one last question before we let you go. In the new place that you've moved into successfully, do you have your own man cave, or is your man cave become a storage facility like mine has at my house?
No, and here's what I did. What I decided to do was, in designing the house, I created my man cave by expanding the size of the covered patio with the outdoor kitchen. Now, here's the trick. Most of the time, they do not want their stuff outside, especially for a long period of time. So you can absolutely keep that area clean and nothing but yours. So that's kind of, I learned that over, you know, moving to different houses several times. I didn't want to do an indoor man cave. I wanted to do an outdoor man cave, television, surround sound, outdoor kitchen. I can literally live out there, never have to step foot back inside. So they don't tend to put their nice stuff out there on the patio, especially in the South Louisiana weather.
And Chris Blair just became my hero. I just took notes. Chris, appreciate you coming on, brother, making time for us. Enjoy this series this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Have a great week. Go Tigers.
Voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, joining us there.
I was taking notes as well. It's genius.
Smart man.
And I love how he left himself, though, plausible deniability, because he was like, he said twice, he was like, you know, they don't like their stuff out there. And then later he said, they don't like their nice stuff out there. You can keep your stuff. We don't know who they is. Who could they could be the kids. I mean, it could be anybody. You know, it doesn't. Plausible deniability. That's a smart man.
Very
you can tell
man.
He speaks for a living. Right?
Smart man. Our hero, Chris Blair, got his man cave, designed it, built that house, and made sure to design it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Smart. It's a smart move. That's not a rookie move. That's a vet move.
And also, the moving and building of a house explains the kind of sporadic nature of Chris Blair in the last few months. No one told me he was building a house. Would have understood a little bit more. Building a house doesn't seem like a easygoing project, right?
No, it's not. I appreciate Chris coming on with us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back after this break, we'll wrap up the second hour. Hey, Ron Higgins coming up from Tiger Details to start off the third hour right here on 103.7 The Game. Time to close out the second hour here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. We're going to do so with talking some Raging Cajun softball. That's right. The hits just keep coming. The honors just keep getting racked up, collecting them. That's what Summer Ellison is doing for the UL softball team. The Raging Cajun's junior ace picked up her fourth consecutive and seventh overall this season, the Community Coffee Sunbelt Conference Pitcher of the Week Award that was given out on Tuesday. The former Turlings Catholic star recorded four victories last week, including all three games of a Sunbelt series for the second straight weekend. She helped the Raging Cajuns extend their win streak to 23 games and now have extended their Sunbelt Conference record of 24-0. In conference play. This is what she did over four games, guys. She surrendered only two runs on nine hits in 22 and a third innings of work while striking out 29. She also became the first Raging Cajun star to reach 30 wins since Jordan Wallace accomplished the same feat back in 2013.
How many hits? Two hits? Gave up, allowed two hits?
Two runs, nine hits.
Two runs, nine hits. That's 67 batters.
That is correct.
Just to put it in perspective.
Watching her live, and you can read more about Summer picking up yet another award on the 103.7 The Game blog. She is just so cool when she comes in the game. Give a perfect example. Sunday I'm there, Lampson Park, for the regular season finale at home for the Raging Cajuns. They're on the road this weekend with a three-game stand up in Monroe. Versus them Warhawks. Allison DeVille, the young woman from Port Barry who got her first career start because it was senior day on Sunday, she gives up a run and then another run gets credited to her due to an error. So they're down 2-0. They're in the second inning. Coach Jerry Glasgow calls for Summer. She comes in, gets a ground out, boom, then a strikeout. She doesn't give up a hit the rest of the game. She comes in relief. There's runners on. She has to get themselves out of a jam. She strikes out to get out of the inning, and then she doesn't give up a single hit the rest of the way as the Raging Cajuns get yet another victory. That's the type of pitcher she is. Pressure situation, their record's about to fall. They're in a troublesome spot. And Summer just comes in and says, "Oh, I got this. Not to worry." Ellison's 7 weekly honors is the most for a Raging Cajuns pitcher in a single season since the great, the legend herself, Ashley Brignac, received the exact amount back in 2011. And Ellison is just one off the program record of 8 claimed by Brooke Mitchell that occurred way back in 2004. UL, 46-4 overall, the number 8 ranked team in the country, 24-0 in Sun Belt play, like I say, concludes its regular season this weekend at in-state foe UL Monroe. I anticipate the Raging Cajuns are going to have a good weekend up in northeast Louisiana. That's all I'm saying. Second hour in the books, third hour on deck. Ron Higgins, Tiger Details, joins us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Raging Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when, you know, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, see your dad, night in and night out, it's really different. I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home, to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. It's time now for us to head out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He's one of the most well-respected sports journalists in the state of Louisiana. It's the one and only Ron Higgins from TigerDetails.com. Ron, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm great, Raymond. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. There's a bevy of topics that I want to discuss with you concerning LSU athletics, so I'll get right to it, my friend. So, Will Wade. And he gets mentioned again in a courtroom. This time it's a transcript from a video conversation that was had by an assistant coach at Arizona. Just your thoughts, Ron. It's like a rash that won't go away. No matter how many shots and how much medicine you take and how many trips to the doctor, it's just seemingly always is flaring up again and again with this Will Wade and corruption trial situation. Your thoughts?
I look at it that at this point that they amended his contract a few weeks ago and they brought him back, and I think at this point, with the new AD in place, I think if they do find evidence that of any of this is true, that Scott Woodward won't hesitate in firing him. Won't hesitate a second in firing him. Because then they won't have to pay him off. They fire him now without evidence, other than what's on the tape, and that's damning stuff, but it's still not absolute tangible proof. They fire him, they have to pay him off. And I think they're, you know, would like to see some evidence that there's, that these things were committed, so they'll have proof to fire him. I know Will's defense can always be, I was just talking to talk and make it, you know, just to talk with this guy. It sounded like I'm a big dog talking with him. But, and I don't mean, I don't, I don't believe this stuff was what this guy was talking to. This guy just saying all this stuff was making this stuff up. I don't believe that at all. I believe this guy was telling the truth. I thought the story was truthful from the beginning because I know the guys, the writers at Yahoo, and I've known them for years, and they're regular reporters. They just don't throw stuff out there. So at this point, I think it's honestly. First of all, I don't know how Will Wade is even recruiting at this point. I don't know how you can recruit and go in somebody's living room and recruit with all this stuff coming out every couple of days. I don't know if Scott Woodward has sat down and had a couple of conversations with Will and to get all the facts and stuff. But I do know that Scott will not hesitate making a move if some of this stuff is true. And the funny thing is, you know, the difference between Scott Woodward firing in and Joe Oliva firing in is vastly different because you with Joe Oliva, you just never got the sense that he really cared much about LSU. He cared more about Joe Oliva. And it was a job, not a passion with him. And with Scott Woodward, you understand from the beginning that he's a Baton Rouge guy who deeply cares for the university. And he wants to do what's best for the university and the program. And I think just the change in AD if there's a change in the head coach, I think the change in AD will probably make it more acceptable to people who thought that Will Wade should be reinstated in before. So that's kind of an interesting dynamic how that works.
We're talking to Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com. Ron, you know, you and I talk about this, and we've talked about this off the air about the Will Wade situation, and all of our media friends do diligent reporting on this. The reaction is always like, either, oh, you shouldn't be doing that, you know, you're trying to tear this man down and everything like this, and everyone, there was a groundswell of support of having Wade reinstated. But even more so than that, and this is something that I've just noticed over the years, I think the majority of the folks just don't care. There's apathy when it comes to corruption in college athletics. I think people have accepted it. I think they just don't see a big deal about it, and the bottom line is, as long as their team wins, that's all that matters. Do you think that's how the majority of the public kind of views it?
Yeah, I think because they think everybody cheats, and I mean, most of the major colleges, you know, cheat, and I can't disagree with them. I mean, I think it's true. But it's not just athletes from some fans. Look at this trial that's going on right now. How many compliance people do you think are sitting in that trial watching that? Zero.
Correct.
So it's like, we don't want to see this. We don't want to know what's going on. Okay. We really don't know what's going to go on. We know what's going on, but we don't know, want to know what's going on.
Right. They're putting their heads in the sand.
Exactly. We don't know, but we know this stuff goes on. We know it's always going on, but now that it's here and this guy's telling us what's going on, we don't really want to hear it, so we're not going to be here. So in that sense, they're just as apathetic as his fans are because, you know, they want to continue as business as usual because they understand everybody does this, and if you're really bad at it, you get caught. It's the part of college athletics you don't like, and I've been doing this for 4 years. And as a media guy, you know this stuff goes on. And, I mean, you know that, you know, if you just look at it from a common sense standpoint with Naz Reid, here's a 5-star guy from New Jersey everybody wanted. And all of a sudden, he decides he wants to play in Baton Rouge, Louisiana for a program that hasn't been very good for a coach who just got here. Now, just on the surface, you go, what? Really? Well, he must be a great recruiter. Man. That's the night people think, well, he's a great recruiter. The rest of the college basketball is thinking, okay, how the hell got from New Jersey end up in Baton Rouge and the program's not very good? You know, and see, in football, you can see that. Because LSU's got a track record in football, and they're well known in football. They've always been well known in football. And so that's why LSU can recruit nationally, because they have a brand name nationally in football. But in basketball, they don't. So when this happens, something like this, it's going to send a breadcrumb to the common sense people throughout basketball. You look at it and go, here's what, well, you know, how did a guy from New Jersey get to Baton Rouge all of a sudden when, you know, he's a five-star guy and all these other programs want him and LSU gets him? Well, common sense tells you something. I mean, now when you look at it, like, something had to go on, I guess. And now it's coming out that maybe something did go on. You know, and again, and I'm not, you know, I say allegedly went on. And I'm sure that Mazzari allegedly was offered by a lot of other people the same kind of, you know, money or trying to get money, allegedly, because if you're a high-end recruit who's a pro prospect, and more than likely you're going to get financial offers from a lot of different places, and you have to outbid somebody for somebody. And I guess LSU allegedly outbid them if they got him that way. So, you know, but again, it has to be proved, and I think that's why there's, you know, that he has a new fire, and my LSU minimum his contract is like, well, we can fire you and not have to pay you if you're found guilty of violations. So the NCAA sends us a level one, level two violations, or if the NCAA sends us a notice if you've been involved in them. So, yeah, you're right about the apathetic stuff, and I guess people have become numb to the fact that they just think the amateurism in college athletics is a joke at this point, because they kind of accept the fact that all the really good players get paid, and it's a matter of what you get caught paying them.
It's very true, Ron, very true. We're talking to Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com. Let's switch off quickly from basketball. Let's go to football. Earlier this week, because of some recruits coming and going, LSU now has the number one ranked recruiting class in the SEC and nationally, according to 247 Sports. A bit of a wrinkle in this is that Edo's been a very good recruiter, but there seems to be a different dynamic since the hiring of Joe Brady, not only with the players there already in Baton Rouge with what he wants to do with the offense, but it appears that he's already making an impact on the recruiting trail as well. Your thoughts on what Joe Brady's being able to do, and if you think it's having a direct, you know, direct impact on recruiting for the 2020 class?
Well, I definitely think it does. And I don't think Ed Orgeron would hire anybody that isn't a good recruiter. It's always been his M.O., you know, as much as he likes Joe Brady's football stuff, you're going to have to, when you work for Ed Orgeron, you're going to have to be a good recruiter. And you're going to be on a staff of good recruiters, so it's going to be very competitive within the staff. I think Joe Brady's youth, his concepts, and the fact he's worked with the Saints and Breeze, and the fact that what he does really offensively resonates with these high school kids, because it's the same kind of concepts that they're playing in and been brought up in. And yeah, I think he's been very effective. And it's kind of resonated in recruiting. And, you know, right now LSU's killing it. Now, the key is to always take all this stuff with a grain of salt. You know, it's great to be ranked in recruiting commitments, but come back and see me on recruiting day and see where you're ranked. Because it's a fight to the end with all these recruits. I mean, they can come visit you on campus right now and see how much they love it, and they commit, and then a week later they're on somebody else's campus and they decommit. So I take all this with a grain of salt until the day they sign, whether it's in early signing period in December or February. You may have them committed, but you got to keep recruiting them to keep them committed, because nobody gives up on anybody, especially in the SEC, as far as recruiting. If the guy commits you're still not going to give up on him. I mean, look how many people Alabama has gotten because Nick has refused to quit recruiting somebody. Alabama's flipped a lot of people. And then people flip stuff on Alabama, but Nick's probably flipped more people back on Alabama than others that flipped on him. And so I think Ed knows that. So even though LSU looks great recruiting right now, and I agree with me that their staff has done a magnificent job, the key is to hang on these guys and hopefully you can get them to sign in December and get me in to get it over with.
Talking to Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com. Ron, before I let you go, I want to kind of get your thoughts on baseball. Look, things did not start off well for them. They had to throw Zach Hess back out there as the Friday night starter after Paul Maneri had made the decision to move him to the bullpen because of Henry's arm soreness, which seems to be a plague there in Baton Rouge and across college baseball this season. Zach gets roughed up. They lose the first game, but then they fight back. Strong performances by Eric Walker and Landon Marceau. Gavin Dugas at the plate as well. They take that series. Now they welcome in Ole Miss for a three-game stand. What are you looking from LSU this weekend against the Rebels?
Well, like we almost say every week, Zach Hess has got to do better. And I don't want to put all the blame on Zach Hess, but your Friday night starter has to be pretty consistently good. If you look at some of LSU's past Friday night starters, for them to advance deep in the NCAA tournament and our College World Series team, you cannot have any of your starting three pitchers, your first three, cannot be weak links. Okay, they can't go out and get shelled every other game. And I'm kind of at loss for Zach Hess, what's going on. I enjoy talking. I think he's a personal kid. He's a smart kid. Maybe sometimes he might be too smart. Maybe he overthinks stuff. I'm not the pitching coach. Only Alan Dunn knows that. But it's come to the point now. It's go time. You're coming down the stretch here. You got three SEC series left against Ole Miss and here at Arkansas, and then home against Auburn. And he's got to go out and win games. The pleasant thing about this past weekend, the pleasant surprise, besides Marceau holding up, was Eric Walker started to look like last year. 2 years ago, he started to be that effective. Great breaking pitches. His fastballs it's got up in speed past 90. That's the one that I think it's been pleasantly surprised. He's kind of getting back to where he was 2 years ago, and they desperately need that. I get baffled by LSU's bats, how they just disappeared against the aces of Friday night staffs. Nobody hits. And then all of a sudden, they break out the last 3 days. It's a pitching that different on Friday than Saturday if they can't hit anybody. And this weekend's a huge series. Ole Miss is good, and it'll be interesting to have the whole father-son Bianco deal going on. But to me, if LSU wants to get to the College World Series, the Friday night pitching has to improve. And I know Paul was on the verge of making a change, and putting the freshman stud in there and moving guests to the bullpen, which I agree with, and I think you probably agree with too.
Yes.
Zach Hess is much better coming out of the bullpen than as a starting pitcher because he can kind of just go after people from the beginning and doesn't have to think too much about what he's throwing and knows he can just let it rip and be aggressive. I think Zach is better when he doesn't think as much. And I think as a starting pitcher, you really have to think a lot about, just how to get guys out. Maintain your arm and see how far you can go in a game. as a reliever or a closer, you just go after them, which Zach was great at 2 years ago. And and there's no shame in trying starting pitching and not working out and going back to being a reliever and being great at it. Some Memphis guys in the Hall of Fame, there's a ton of them who are great closers. So it doesn't matter how you make your living in the major league, as long as you make your living. And I think, hopefully they'll get their pitching rotation straight down on Friday night to where they can, you know. But that, to me, that's the key to this team. And maybe because it has affected their LSU's hitting in the sense was, you know, you go out there and you're down like 5-0 or 6-0 after two innings, and you start pressing up the plate because you feel like you've got to get runs because you've been shelled in the first couple of innings. And so maybe if they have better pitching on Friday night and you know, keep these games close so that the hitting won't be feel like they're under duress as much and press as much. So I think it's all kind of interconnected, but it's all interconnected to the Friday night pitching. And if LSU wants to go to Omaha, it's the Friday night pitching has to step up drastically.
Ron, appreciate you coming on, giving us the insight as always, my friend. Keep up the good work, and I'll see you out there at Alex Box Stadium this weekend, my friend.
Yeah, I'll be there Friday night. Be good. Thanks a bunch, man.
Ron Higgins, TigerDetails.com. We have to go to a break here for RP3 and Company, but we'll return with more sports talk right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, swimming pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only lock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game reminds you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos, as always. Programming reminder. Jordy Holtberg show today, this afternoon, with Uncle Jordy from 2 to 4. That's going to lead you into the good brother himself, Ben Love. Bumper to bumper sports. He's going to take you 4 to 6 today, because at 6 o'clock, those five guys, their stories and their lies will be back on the air from 6 to 7, and they're going to lead you right into Houston Astros baseball versus the Minnesota Twins rubber match at Target Field live right here on 103.7 The Game. So make sure to keep it live and local all day long right here on Acadiana's number one sports station. Coming up, we're going to talk with Saturday Down South's Connor O'Gara about the draft right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He's a senior national columnist for both SaturdayDownSouth.com and SaturdayTradition.com. He's also the co-host of the SDS podcast. It's our good friend Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. I feel like I'm kind of on summer vacation a little bit. I mean, not like I'm actually on vacation, but once the draft ends, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, for the next 2.5 months in this business, it gets really, really slow, as I'm sure you know.
Yes. Yes. It'll be your slow time of the year. So we'll help you get there, brother. We'll make it as easy for you as possible. 600,000 people went to Nashville to watch the draft over a three-day period. That number is insane to me, Connor. Your thoughts about the reaction of Nashville and how the folks came out to Nashville for the draft?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, that's kind of what you expected a little bit from an area like that where, I mean, they just had such a great setup for it, too. I mean, they had all of this space to be able to just, like, take over that entire street like that. And Nashville, I mean, as a town, like, or as a city, rather, is – nobody's growing the way that Nashville is right now. And I think you saw a lot of that really kind of come to the forefront. And going to Nashville this time of year ain't such a bad thing. Like having the draft in Chicago or Philadelphia, like it might sound cool, but like we saw like what it can take when you have the nightlife of Nashville and it's just kind of right in the heart of that. And it was really cool to see. I mean, I think having the draft in the SEC geographical footprint, probably not a bad idea. Maybe something that they should do more often.
Connor, your thoughts, kind of your takeaways from the draft, particularly with the SEC sets a draft record and two quarterbacks in the SEC, Drew Lock and Jared Stidham, both fell. But in your opinion, you feel that they went to really great spots. Why do you think that?
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely one of the takeaways. And kind of a theme for the whole draft is that it felt like there were a lot of SEC guys who fell way further than we thought they were going to. But a lot of them, you know, I would argue it ended up working out pretty well. And, you know, with the two quarterbacks especially, the Drew Lock thing, you know, we think he's going off the board at number 10 to the Broncos. And we hear all this stuff from Senior Bowl about John Elway telling Drew Lock he's not going to flip past number 10. And then they trade the pick. And it's like, okay, well, what are you doing? And then they have their second pick come around in the second round, and it's at, like, number 41 overall, and they take an offensive lineman out of Kansas State, and you're like, wait, okay, so Drew Lock is sitting there. You had two chances to take him. You didn't take him. And I actually tweeted out, like, oh, looks like John Elway didn't love him as much as he said he did. And then, of course, they trade up to get the very next pick, and they take Drew Lock. I got cold-taked real hard on that one. But, I mean, like, that's just kind of the nature of the draft. And credit John Elway because he recognized that the market – wasn't there for Drew Lock in the way that many thought it would be, and a lot of these teams that needed quarterbacks, you know, weren't necessarily willing to go up and get one in the first round necessarily. And a team like the Broncos that have a starter in Joe Flacco, they're going to get to groom Drew Lock in the best way possible. And I think that with all the pressure that John Elway is facing, he's going to do everything he can to put the best possible talent around Drew Lock. That's what I like about that situation. And then he's not going to be asked to be a day one starter there, because I don't think Drew Lock is ready to be that, just in terms of the way that he reads coverages and the way that he handles blitzes. I think that he needs some development in that department. So perfect situation for him. And then the Jared Stidham thing, yeah, I mean, I get that all these guys have gone to New England. You know, you can go back to Jimmy Garoppolo, Ryan Mallett, these guys that are drafted to be kind of the replacement to Brady or whatever, and you know, they're expected to be the replacement for Brady, and then you kind of look up and they're like, oh, well, they're not on the roster like 3 years from now. Brady's 42 now. Like, he wasn't 42 when Garoppolo got drafted. And Stidham is somebody that obviously he wasn't going to be an immediate starter as a rookie. I mean, the scheme change that he's going to have to go to playing in Gus Malzahn's offense to now playing in more of a traditional pro-style offense, that's going to be way different for him, and he's going to need some time. But what a great situation to be able to learn from, you know, the greatest of all time, to be able to walk in there and just truly learn how to master the position, because he needs work, obviously, at that as well, and he had a lot of the same issues that Drew Lock did, just from a coverage standpoint. But the talent is certainly there, and I like the odds of him actually being the heir apparent to Tom Brady, which I know that sounds kind of crazy, and who knows how many years he's going to play, but I give Stidham a better chance than we've seen in years past from some of these guys that the Patriots have drafted to sort of fill the depth chart behind Brady.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara, senior national columnist for Saturday Down South and Saturday Tradition. Connor, 64 players out of the SEC were drafted. 64. That's a new record. Do you see that trend slowing down anytime soon?
No, I mean, why would it? You know, a lot of this comes back to, I think a lot of this, in the beginning of it, is the recruiting stuff. And as long as the SEC has like 10 of the top 20 recruiting classes, they're going to be putting themselves in positions to produce NFL talent. That's what a lot of these recruiting rankings are based on. And if a guy is a five-star, that means they think he's going to be an NFL player, yada, 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 all that stuff. But this comes back to development, too. And let's not forget that the SEC did not have a coach fired this offseason for the first time in, what, like 13 years? I mean, there are coaches in place now in the SEC where I'd argue that just the coaching in general is at a better place than it's been in a very long time, probably since Saban has been at Alabama. And that is going to lead to development. And there aren't these guys like Butch Jones at Tennessee where he's wasting all this talent. They're not having guys getting to the draft. Yeah, Tennessee was the only SEC team that didn't have a player drafted, but do I give them a much better chance of producing NFL talent with Jeremy Pruitt? Absolutely. And I think you can kind of go up and down the conference and look at some of the development and the fact that 13 of 14 SEC teams had multiple guys drafted. I mean, that's amazing. That doesn't, you know, that's not something that you should necessarily take for granted. That's almost a more impressive stat than having the 64 guys drafted overall, because that speaks to the depth of the conference and the fact that you could take Bama away from the SEC's draft total, and the SEC would still win by 14 draftees. I mean, it's unbelievable. You could take away the SEC's four top 10 teams, and then the Big Ten would have one more draftee than the SEC. Like, those are the kind of absurd numbers that we're talking about that offend the Danny Cannells of the world, but they're there, and they're there for a reason. If all these guys were flaming out in the NFL, they wouldn't still be getting drafted. So it's a variety of things, but yeah, to answer your question, I don't think this is slowing down anytime soon.
You led me to my next question. Are you and Danny Cannell going to get involved in a dance-off, like a you-got-served kind of dance-off, Connor?
Goodness gracious, like, I just kind of feel bad for him at this point. Like, all these narratives he's trying to throw out there, it's like, dude, come on, like, get off it. Like, he's trying to argue that, oh, you know, I think he made some claim about, oh, the ACC owns the first round or something like that. He said that early on because the ACC, like, briefly took a lead in the first round with more picks than the SEC, and I actually, like, tweeted at him, the SEC has had, like, 24 more first-round picks in the ACC in the last decade or something like that. So it's like, well, no, they really don't own the first round. And then later on, of course, he's tweeting that, oh, just, you know, don't forget the national championship and Clemson just killed an SEC team. And it's like, why would people get so worked up about these draft numbers? And it's, you know, he tries to make these arguments every year that just fall so incredibly flat that it's sad at this point. And I like Danny Cannell, don't get me wrong, and I think that he does a lot of smart things, but I just don't get why he's still trying to push that whole narrative when it's just there's nothing to it.
His narrative reminds me a lot of his quarterback play at Florida State. I had to. Let's talk about the guys. Look, the big headline from round one was obviously Jones out of Duke being selected by the Giants. And I love Dwayne Haskins' reaction to that was caught. And then he falls to the Redskins. I actually like what the Giants did after that pick, which is an odd thing. Like, I like the guys that they took. They got Baker right out of Georgia. There later in the first round, they had multiple picks. I like some of the guys that they drafted. How much of a head scratcher is this with Jones being selected 6 overall to the Giants?
It's the type of head scratcher that can set a franchise back a decade. I mean, it really is. And my first thought when I saw that move was like, I feel bad for Saquon Barkley. It's somebody who I love watching Saquon Barkley play football. I've seen him play in person, and it's just, I mean, he's the best player I've ever seen play in person at the college level. I mean, it's unbelievable. At least from a Big Ten standpoint, he is that good. So to watch him now have to deal with this big experiment. Where Dave Gettleman, I mean, his basis, that was the bigger problem, was what he said the next day to justify the pick. The dude comes out and says that he watched Dwayne Haskins in the Big 12 championship. Oh, I don't know, is Ohio State still in the Big 12? No, they've been in the Big Ten since 1912, guy. Like, come on, like, let's have a clue of what we're talking about. He said he watched him in that game. By the way, Dwayne Haskins threw 499 passing yards and had 5 touchdowns and won a conference championship. But his justification for taking Daniel Jones was, oh, yeah, I went down to the Senior Bowl and I saw him play a few series and we really liked what we saw. In an exhibition game against base defenses. Oh, by the way, he was a middle-of-the-pack quarterback in the ACC. Well, let's just base our entire like next decade and the future of all these people on that decision alone, because all they do is just take the Senior Bowl MVP. They've done it each of the last 3 years at the quarterback position. It's like you need to have a different criteria for evaluating quarterbacks, and to think that Eli Manning still has something left in the tank is foolish. So, yeah, I mean, I hated the pick in every way possible. I think Dwayne Haskins was the best quarterback in this draft, and I think the Giants are going to regret that pick for a very long time.
But that pick did give us a great thing on Twitter where someone posted that Jones looks like the actor playing Eli Manning in a biopic about Peyton Manning. That alone is worth the pick, Connor. That alone is worth the pick. You got to look at the silver lining here, my friend. So that was a bit of a head-scratcher. The Raiders at 4, I like the Clemson defensive lineman. I thought that was a little bit of a reach right there, but that does – consider a need, and I really like their two picks later in the first round. I think they got immense value there. Mississippi State seemingly had every player on their roster drafted. My question to you, Connor, shouldn't they have been better?
Yeah, you could definitely make that case. And, you know, I was on record this time last year saying I thought Mississippi State was going to win 10 games, and that was considered an outlandish prediction. I didn't really think it was, considering they returned 81% of their production from the year before, and you look at the talent that came off the board, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, it's unbelievable. I think replacing Jeffrey Simmons will be the toughest guy to replace in the SEC, maybe the toughest in the country. I mean, I think he is that good, and I think he disrupts the game so much. He and Montez Sweat, you just don't get duos like that every so often. And so everybody, of course, is throwing out after Mississippi State has three players picked in the first round, like, wait, how did this team only go 8-5? And I know that you can nitpick, and I am a Joe Moorhead apologist, as big of a Joe Moorhead apologist, believer, whatever you want to say, as there is. But you could really, really go back to a few plays in their season that would have changed things drastically. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, the Outback Bowl, where there's a touchdown pass. I can't remember who was the receiver who dropped the pass. But not only does he just drop this touchdown pass that would have been a go-ahead score, but it goes for a pick. Like, it's right in his arms. He just drops it, and it goes the other way. Like, things like that kind of happened all year to Mississippi State. And they didn't help themselves, don't get me wrong. They shot themselves in the foot way too many times. I think they could have easily been a 10-win team. It wasn't like they were just completely disastrous in some of these close games that they had. Their defense was so incredibly good, and they did whatever they could to try and keep them in games. But, like, it was a tough fit in year one. With Nick Fitzgerald and Joe Moorhead's offense, you need to be able to stretch the field. They just did not have the personnel to do that. Nick Fitzgerald was not good enough from an accuracy standpoint, and his receivers didn't help him out. And when you have things like that, when you have Kylan Hill banged up for pretty much the latter half of the season, it's kind of hard to get to that place that you thought you could be at from an offensive standpoint. So, yeah, they should have won more than 8 games last year, don't get me wrong, but it's still an impressive draft accomplishment nonetheless.
Connor, we'll wrap it up with this before we let you go. There was a terrific article that you had written on Saquon Hampton, late-round pick by the New Orleans Saints, 6th-rounder, the Rutgers defensive back, very versatile. You've called him one of the more underrated players in this year's draft. Tell us a little bit about why you're so high on Saquon Hampton.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a classic case of one of these guys who had a really good year on a bad team. And I think that hurts some of these guys in the draft as you look at the process and you're like, wait, you were on that defense that wasn't very good and that just got destroyed in every Big Ten game? Well, yeah, I mean, the reality is one player does not make or break a defense, especially at a safety position where, you know, teams ran all over Rutgers. But, yeah, I do think that he is one of those players that just needed to show that he could stay healthy. He dealt with a pec injury coming into his senior year, and his senior year he was really, really good. I mean, played extremely well in coverage. The guy can make tackles in space. I think he showed that he is durable. I know that there are some injury concerns there. Performed well at the combine. This is somebody who I think is going to have a chance to have a long career in the NFL. And, you know, the thing that a lot of teams look for is, do these kids just kind of get it? Like, just in talking to them, and you can spend 20 minutes talking to somebody and kind of trying to figure out, do they get it or do they not get it? Do they not understand this opportunity that's in front of them and how hard they're going to have to work to survive? And I definitely, I mean, I've talked to a lot of these guys, a lot of these guys in the pre-draft process, and I got a very, very good impression from him of just having the right mindset going in. Now, do injuries happen? Is that, you know, something that could impact his career? Absolutely. But if I'm betting on somebody to maybe make it out of day three and just have one of these, like, solid, like, 8, 9, 10-year careers, I think he is a very good bet to do so. I think Saints fans are really going to like him, and I think he's going to be on that roster for a long time.
Connor, appreciate you coming down, as always, making some time for us. Enjoy a little R&R here in the next couple of weeks, and we'll hit you up when we get a little bit closer to camp, my friend.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, SaturdayTradition.com. Check out his work. It is a terrific piece that he wrote there on Hampton. I just retweeted it out. Saints fans, if you want to go check it out, go to my Twitter account and check that out. When we come back, we'll have to wrap up the show, but we got some UFC news concerning one of our local champions. We'll tell you all about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. I want to thank our guest today, Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers, making time for us. He successfully has moved into his new place. Congrats to him. And he's got a man cave area. He is the envy of Cody and I. Want to also give thanks to Ron Higgins from TigerDetails.com. Talking LSU baseball, LSU football recruiting, as well as the Will Wade situation. And a big thanks to Connor O'Gara, giving us a wealth of knowledge there from Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com. Programming reminder, Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4 this afternoon. That'll be followed by the good brother, Ben Love, Bumper to Bumper Sports, 4 to 6. Then, Five Guys, Stories and Lies, Don Allen, Glenn Quibido, Bruce Brown, and the gang will be live in studio. They'll be swapping their stories from 6 to 7, and that'll lead us into Astros at Twins Target Field action tonight, broadcast live right here on 103.7 The Game, starting at 7 o'clock. But before we get out of here and put a bow on today's show, we got fighting news to report. ESPN late last night reported that Daniel Cormier is on tap for the UFC pay-per-view on August the 17th in Anaheim, California. He will be taking on Cody.
I want to hear you try.
Miocek?
Hey. They call me Hell. They call me CC. They call me Hell. They call me Jay.
That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. Stipe Miocic is what you're looking for. Stipe Miocic is the name there.
You're my boy forever now. that was amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
DC will be back in the octagon. We thought it was supposed to be a Brock Lesnar fight, but as Brock Lesnar has shown me over and over again, that he is nothing but hot garbage bum. So good. DC doesn't need to lower his standards by fighting the washed-up former champion. He'll fight a guy that he went toe-to-toe with. August 17th, Anaheim, California, UFC pay-per-view. DC will be back in the octagon. Excited about that. Both fighters confirmed that they are in the process of finalizing the bout to ESPN. So hoping there'll be no snags in that, and that fight will go on, and we'll get to see DC in the octagon probably for the last time. Your thoughts, Cody?
It's great. I love that fight. Was amazing the first time around. It'll probably be better this time around. This is the end of DC's career. I love it. And you know what? I would welcome Brock Lesnar back to WWE, so that's okay with me too.
No. He is the man that ended The Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. I will never forgive him for that.
And that's why he should come back.
All right, good point. Damn it. I hate it when you're right. I hate it when you're right on the show. Terrific show today. Y'all enjoy yourself. Happy May the 1st. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow right here on 103.7 The Game.